threw into the river Bhaginada. Later, this river became known as Danda Bhaga Nadi. Purport. The mystery of the Sanya Danda of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been explained by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the order of sannyas from the Mayavadi sannyasi. The Mayavadi sannyasis generally carry one staff, or danda. Taking advantage of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's absence, Sri Nityananda Prabhu broke the staff into three parts and threw it into the river now known as Banganada Danda Bhaginadi. In the sannyas order, there are four divisions, Kutichak, Bahudak, Hamsa, and Paramahamsa. Only when the sannyasi remains on the Kutichak or Bahudak platform can he carry a staff. However, when one is elevated to the status of Hamsa or Paramahamsa, after touring and preaching the bhakti cult, he must give up the sannyas staff. In our society, they set a standard of, we're supposed to carry the staff for 10 years, and after 10 years. But many of our sannyasis in society continue to carry the staff even after the 10 years, and as a sign of humility, because we should not think that one is elevated to a higher status. But the requirement is 10 years minimum, and many of our devotees go beyond that and carry it continually. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is therefore said, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, Nahi Anya. Two personalities, Srimati Radharani and Sri Krishna, are combined in the incarnation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, considering Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be an extraordinary person, Lord Nityananda Prabhu did not wait for the Paramahansa stage. He reasoned that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is automatically on the Paramahansa stage. Therefore, he does not need to carry the sannyas danda. This is the reason Sri Nityananda Prabhu broke the staff into three pieces and threw it into the water. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned around, he said to Lord Nityananda, please hand me my danda. Lord Nityananda says, it's gone. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, what do you mean it's gone? All the demigods, they reside within the danda. He said, well, we were dancing in ecstasy and you fell unconscious and we both landed on your danda and it broke. And it broke. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, externally he was angry, internally he was pleased. But in order to exhibit the mood of a sannyasi, he became angry and he said, I will not travel with you anymore. He was traveling with a few devotees. He said, either you go first or I'll go first. They're on their way to Jagannath Puri. So the devotee said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you go first and we'll follow behind. So he became a little upset with Lord Nityananda, externally, just to teach everyone that the sannyasi must not disregard their anyone following any particular ashram, must follow the rules and regulations of the ashram and not act independently or whimsically of these few rules and restrictions in order to, one, to become purified, and to also to teach others the example. Even if one is beyond the rules and regulations, one should follow them anyway to show example for others, because whatever someone does, people say, oh, he's done that, so therefore I can do that also. So Srila Prabhupada, he used to follow very carefully the rules and regulations and strictures in order to teach and to preach the message, because if Prabhupada broke them, generally people say, well, think, well, I can also break them too. So in order to set example, the great souls follow the rules and regulations, although they're beyond the rules and regulations. Jagannatha dule deki avista hoila tandava kari prema nachite lagila. After seeing the temple of Jagannath from a distant place, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately became ecstatic. After offering obeisances to the temple, he began to dance in the ecstasy of love of God. Purport. The word dula refers to the temple where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated. The present temple of Jagannath Puri was constructed by a king, Anga Bhima. Historians say this temple must have been constructed at least 2,000 years ago. During the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the small buildings surrounding the original temple had not been constructed, nor was the high platform in front of the temple present during the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay. So we'll stop there. Any comments, questions on this? Yes, Shankar?
You made a point that even if one is, say, great soul and beyond the rules of regulation, still one should follow them instead of the dog's love.
Yes.
However, we're seeing in our Brahma version of the line that sometimes some of the acharyas sound like a very cavalier-like nature.
Mm-hmm.
And superficially, they may not always subconsciously follow those rules of
regulation. Yeah.
So how is it that sometimes we see, even in this one, because of someone's individuality, they may have somewhat of an attitude of nature? And do that so much externally, they follow the regulation.
that two things are there, just like we see that Krishna took a spiritual master. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also took a spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya sat on the throne of Vishnu, and for 21 hours he was in the mood of the Supreme Lord. He revealed his transcendental form of six-armed Lord Vishnu to Lord Nityananda in the house of Srivas. So he did both. So, generally speaking, as explained by Srila Prabhupada, you know, we're a preaching movement. And he wanted to set that standard. But it is natural for many persons who are beyond the rules and regulations to follow their inner mood. And they'll do that due to their transcendental relationship with Krishna. Not consciously, but naturally. So, therefore, it's explained that, you know, there was many great need, there was great need for explanations at times in order to make an understanding between the two. Sometimes we would have to explain the activities of a certain person. Like I said, if you see Lord Nityananda going into a brothel, you should immediately think he's going in to preach. You shouldn't even question the fact that he's going. You shouldn't go in, but that is Lord Nityananda. He's not going in to break any principles. He's going in to preach, no matter what you may think or not think. So, Prabhupada knew, due to our neophyte condition, and that we have a tendency to imitate. And the verses there, yad yad arachita shtreta, tat tadevi, janarjana, sasayat paramparaman kurute, lukas tananavartante. Whatever a great soul does, common men follow in their footsteps. Whatever standards they set by exemplary action, all the world pursues. This is Bhagavad Gita, third chapter. So generally, with that idea in mind, Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish that mission. But when the great souls go beyond that, break the rules and regulations, then usually they explain things. Like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he broke everything. Wow, he was a Paramahansa, Acharya coming directly from the spiritual world. He revolutionized the whole principles and preachings of Gaudiya Math, of preaching. He was riding in a car. He rode in a car to Radhakund. And there was only two or three cars in the entire city, and he had one of them. The governor had the other one. He wore sewn clothing. To wear sewn clothing, that was unheard of. He sent sannyasis across the ocean. That was also considered to be a breaking of the principle. But he understood Rupa Goswami's principle of Yukta Vairagya. Then you have to use your ability to, according to time and circumstance, to preach the message. So in order to preach, he did that. And he was heavily criticized. It wasn't that he was criticized by his followers. Those who took shelter of him criticized him. Srila Prabhupada says, those who criticized my spiritual master, they fell down. They fell down. So sometimes great souls, they do that. But they have a reason for doing that. And now, if one does, usually Srila Prabhupada wanted to, whatever he did, he explained. Prabhupada explained everything. He had an understanding and explanation for whatever he did, for whatever was, whatever point of etiquette or philosophy came up, Srila Prabhupada was able to nicely explain. And he did. Sometimes he went out of a way to explain things so we would understand. But generally speaking, you know, as a preaching movement, we somewhat try to follow very carefully the rules and regulations. Because if a third-class person imitates a first-class person, what happens is immediately they become sahaj and they fall down. So in order to protect them, the first-class person will not do that, generally. But sometimes out of inner ecstasy, it'll happen. They'll just do something. But they don't consciously do it. They do it just because that is their relationship with Krishna. It's spontaneous. Like Srila Prabhupada, sometimes he would be singing Jai Radha Madhava, and he would be going to ecstasy singing it, and he'd start to experience ecstatic symptoms, but he would restrain himself. He would pull back as hard as he could not to exhibit his emotions publicly. And there was a couple of times where it was too much, he couldn't do it. One time he just stopped, couldn't sing the song anymore, he just sat there, and he said, Jai Hare Krishna. Everybody in the room understand Prabhupada was experiencing great ecstasy. But many times he would restrain himself very strongly. He would try to pull back his external emotions in order not to, you know, be other people will imitate with that. So Prabhupada was very keen on keeping the external etiquette. In our Vaishnava society, etiquette is very, very important. The ornament of a devotee is the etiquette. The behavior of a devotee is the means of how we actually relate to Krishna and how we relate to each other and how we make spiritual advancement. And I was thinking this morning, I'd like to, based on your question, point out a few etiquettes that are essential in the morning program. Again, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that If someone is decorated very nicely, with nice clothes, they may be wearing a jewel, or something that is the outstanding ornament of that decoration. That jewel is considered like, on the body of a devotee, his etiquette. How a devotee conducts in behavior is the standard of religious principles. And so we find throughout the scriptures there's a type of etiquette on every aspect of existence that one must follow in order to maintain an atmosphere of cooperation and devotion, and also to please Krishna. So in the morning program, starting with Mangal Arati, and this is just general etiquette, that those who are leading Mangal Arati, Srila Prabhupada set the standard that we should chant Hare Krishna for at least half or more of the Mangal Arati. Other mantras that we normally find ourselves available to should be chanted at other times. But he wanted Mangal Arati to be at least 15 minutes of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That means the Samsara prayer, no, I'm sorry, the Guru Vastika prayers, should be done 5 minutes, 7 minutes, and then the remainder, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Mantra Panchatattva Mantra, 3 times. And then the remainder of the Mangal Arati, in the Mangal Arati melody, there's a certain melody that we sing, should be done practically through the entire rest of the kirtan. Prabhupada wanted that as the standard. Many times he would stop people from singing and say, if they were not singing the Maha Mantra, he would say, sing the Maha Mantra. Because that is actually the essence of our whole Krishna consciousness, chanting the Maha Mantra. So those of you who lead Mangal Arati, just as a awareness, try to focus on chanting. And then at the end you can always say Jai Kishore Kishori, or Jai Nitai Gaur Hari Bol once or twice, and finish the arti like that. But generally, Srila Prabhupada wanted that. But Srila Prabhupada is still here. He's sitting right on the Vyasa side. He's personally present. It's not a deity. It is a deity and it's not a deity. Prabhupada is there in his murti, and he's watching over us very carefully and accepting our devotion like that. For Tulsi Puja, the etiquette is, of course, you purify your hands and you offer 1 spoonful of water to Tulsi. And you can take the dust from her lotus feet and put it on your head, and you circumambulate 3 times minimum for Tulsi Puja, like that, and chanting the mantras. By worshipping Tulsi, one gets special benedictions. It's more important to worship Tulsi than it is to worship Krishna. And Lord Shiva brought that point out in his one prayer. He was speaking to his consort, and he explained that worship of the devotees of the Lord is higher than worshipping of the Lord. And then he pointed out that worshipping of the spiritual master, and especially Tulsi Devi, is more important than worshipping of the Lord. So by worshipping Tulsi Devi, we get the special mercy of Radha and Krishna. And especially Tulsi she is a resident of Vrindavan. She is an eternal associate of Vrindavan Dham. She is Vrindadevi, the gopi of Vrindavan. She's a special gopi in that she makes all arrangements for Radha and Krishna's pastimes. Every day, all the gopis come to Vrindakund. There's a place near Nandagram, which is the home of Vrindadevi, Tulsi Maharani. And they all go there, and Tulsi Devi, she maps out the day's activities. She gives everybody their service. Okay, you make garlands for Krishna, and you do this for Krishna, and you do that. You know, she just gives all the services to all of them. And then after they all congregate at Tulsi's place, then they go out and serve Krishna all day. So she's like the commander-in-chief. And by getting Tulsi's mercy, you can get entrance into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And because it says you can't get into Vrindavan Dham, even if you're a pure devotee of the Lord, you can't get into Vrindavan Dham unless you get the special benediction of a resident of Vrindavan. You have to have that, what they say, connection, pass. You know, it's like if sometimes you know somebody. Ah, I know him. He's my uncle. He owns the place. So we go in, right? Free, like that. So Tulsi Maharani, she's like that. She's very special. And it says that mantra, Yani Kani Chapapani, Brahmahat Riti Kani Cha, that Brahmahat. Brahmahat means killing of a Brahmin. That's what that means. So what it means is that Tulsi Devi is so powerful that even if you kill the Brahmin, I mean, killing is bad, big and great sin, great event, but even if you kill the Brahmin, which is even the worst sin, if you circumambulate Tulsi, she can relieve the sin of even killing of a Brahmin. So that's what that mantra is saying. Yani Kani Chapapani, Brahmahat. Brahmahat means the killing of a Brahmin, like that. So Tulsi is very, very special. So we, yes.
Is it all right to worship Tulsi at home?
Yes, you can have Tulsi at home. But the only thing is, you can't use the Tulsi leaves unless you take those leaves. And if you have deities, then you can take those leaves and put it on the feet of the deity. One cannot take the leaves directly from Tulsi. Tulsi's leaves have to be offered to the lotus feet of the Vishnu deities. They only go on the Lord's feet. You can't put them on Radharani's feet, and you can't put them on the spiritual master's feet. You can put them in Radharani's hand, and Radharani, sometimes she has a Tulsi garland, she gives it to Krishna. But Tulsi leaves are only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Nityananda is the Supreme Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord, Lord Jagannath is the Supreme Lord, like that. But we can't use the leaves ourselves unless we have deities. So if you have Tulsi at home, that's fine, but take the leaves and either bring them to the temple to be offered, or if you have deities yourself, then you can put them on the lotus feet of your deities, or you can put them on the food. If you're offering food to your deity, then you can use these leaves for, like that.
Yes?
Raj Govinda Prabhu? Do we put Tulsi leaves on Lord Chaitanya's feet?
Yes.
I see them all the time. We put a peacock feather on Lord Chaitanya's head too. So we worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he's playing the role of a devotee, we have to be worshiping him as the Supreme Lord. So, there's always been that, that consideration. How to worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although he's in the mood of a devotee, still the etiquette is we worship him as the Lord, like that. Okay. Okay, so Tulsi Puja. And then, of course, the next is the greeting of the deities. And, of course, when we greet the deities, immediately when the curtains open, the etiquette is, before you pay your obeisances, you look at the deity. This was explained by a number of devotees, senior devotees, by Prabhupada himself, that when the deity curtains opens, you look at their lotus feet, and you raise your eyes up to their face, and then immediately back down to the feet, and then you pay your obeisances, like that. If you just dive on the floor, Krishna says, where are they? Oh, they're down. They're down there. Oh, there they are. Where'd they go? So, you know, for the sake of... It's like when you greet somebody. You offer your greetings, and then next is you pay your obeisances like that. And then Prabhupada explains that three things you think of while you're observing the deity. First, you offer your prayers to the Lord by saying, my dear Lord, I'm very fallen. I'm so fallen. I've fallen to this ocean of material suffering. Please pick me up. And then we say to the Lord, after we say how fallen we are, we say, but you are very merciful. So please engage me in your devotional service. We glorify the Lord, we explain the position of how fallen we are, and we pray for devotional service. These are the three things that is meant to be put into the mind as we are observing the deity. Just to look at the deity, we can appreciate that. That's also devotion. But the tendency of the mind is to wander. So we might, in order to keep the mind fixed in a devotional mood, like that, we look at his feet and pray for his mercy, ask for service, glorify his supreme position, like that. In this way, we're properly reciprocating with the Lord. Okay, so then you do that with each altar as you're going to. Taking Charinamrita, the persons who are giving out three drops, and not that you have like two scoops. Give me another scoop, please. It really tastes good. No. It's three drops. Prabhupada said three drops we take submissively, and we chant the mantra. And then, what is that mantra? The mantra is written on the table. So that by taking the three drops of Charinamrita, we are actually worshipping the Lord like that. So there's one mantra. Yes? It doesn't mean you have to give everybody a Tulsi leaf. The idea is to do your best. If you don't have exactly three drops, it doesn't mean you have to go and get an eyedropper and go... Just do your best. That's the idea. But it doesn't mean everyone has to have a Tulsi leaf. If you can give a person a Tulsi leaf, that's nice. But sometimes I see there are people who are like, I'm trying to give you three drops and I'm trying to give you a Tulsi leaf, and you can get either one or the other, you can't get both. You get the Tulsi leaf with about two scoops, and then you get no Tulsi leaf. It's a very sacred act taking Tulsi for that, because that water that we're taking is the water that bathes the deity every day. The pujaris, they bathe the deity, and the water is collected. And then that water has Gopi Chandan in it, it has Tulsi leaves, sometimes we add a little sweetener to make it palatable. And then we take three drops like that. So it's a very sacred act. You're actually, that water is very, very powerful, very purifying. Simply by taking three drops like that. So then after that, we begin the Guru Puja. And Guru Puja is that we offer garland to Srila Prabhupada. As soon as the end of the Govindam prayers are finished, we should immediately say Jai Prabhupada. There should be no silence. If there's a silence between the ending of the prayers and the beginning of that, it's awkward and it breaks the whole mood. So there should be, as soon as the prayers end, someone should say Jai Srila Prabhupada and the kirtan should start. We should be ready. Should be one ready person ready for kirtan, one person ready for arti, and someone offering the garland. Like that. Should be three people. And usually if it's designated ahead of time, then it's nice, because it flows very nicely. And then gradually everyone should come up and offer flowers. Not that, and the idea is that we line up and offer flowers immediately. Shouldn't wait till after. First the men come, one by one, and offer the flowers. If the men stay back and half the men come, and then the ladies come, and then the rest of the men come, it's not right. The etiquette is the men come, offer the flowers, and then when they're done, then the women can come up and then offer like that. That's the etiquette. The Vedic culture, the etiquette is done like that. It's not that men are better than women, or women are lesser than men. That's not the idea. And that is the culture. And that in every aspect of one's relationship, the women follow either their husband, their guides, like that, the guru, like that. And if we have to make the women wait, or if they have to go before, it creates a break in the etiquette and it becomes quite awkward. So everyone, immediately, as soon as the program starts, all the men come up and offer flowers. In many temples, people line up. There's a line, something like that. And then you come up. And generally, touching Srila Prabhupada's feet, we've never done that. For guests, for persons who are coming from outside, it's okay. But generally, devotees don't do that, touching the feet of Srila Prabhupada. Of course, in India, the etiquette is touching the feet of a holy man. But if you're initiated, if you're initiated devotee, then usually that's not generally done. Those who are not initiated are coming from outside, and there's no problem. You can come and touch Srila Prabhupada's feet. But generally for devotees, we don't do that. Because you're already connected with Prabhupada. Simply by being initiated into this. If you're not initiated, then you can touch Prabhupada's feet. But if you're initiated, it's like when you offer the flower, you're offering it to the feet. That's fine. And then, once you pay your obeisances from this side, with your head, left shoulder always faces the deity, just like we do in the altar, left side, not from this side. Of course, the women have a little bit of a different situation. They can go to the side and pay their obeisances. Women don't pay full dandavats either. They pay regular obeisances. Men can pay full dandavats. And then begin the kirtan. And beginning the kirtan means that it's explained that when the singer sings, everyone should respond. Chanting. The 64 principles in devotional service, which make up the process of devotional service, means singing the glories of the Lord. So, when the singer sings, everyone should respond. If the chanter is chanting, and there's no response, and then I have personal experience, it's very hard to chant. It's very hard. Because the crescendo of the kirtan builds by hearing and chanting. So when someone is singing, he immediately listens. And then when everybody responds, and he hears their response, and he becomes enlightened, and he sings again, and his devotion gradually increases. And that's the same with both sides. If you listen very carefully to the leader, then when you listen, then you can sing very nicely. We do have a problem in this temple. The problem is this acoustics are very, very bad. They're not conducive to kirtan. The thing is, they bounce off these walls and they go somewhere, I don't know where they go. But this temple is not conducive to kirtan. So it's a little extra hard to hear the sound vibrations in this temple. Yeah, it takes a little extra amount of concentration to hear nicely. In some temples, acoustics are fantastic. You don't even have to try. The sound just goes right through you. But this temple, somehow or other, it's just the way it's built. So it takes a little effort, extra effort to hear the sound vibration. But by making that effort, the devotional energy picks up. So when the chanter is chanting, everyone should respond enthusiastically and loudly. Nectar Devotion said one should sing loudly. And even if you don't feel like it, if you sing loudly, after a while you start to feel like it. It becomes natural. Same with dancing. I know not many of us, all of us can dance. But minimum, there should be moving of the feet from side to side. You don't have to jump, you don't have to, get all kinds of, bent out of shape. But you can just move your feet from side to side. Just take one foot and put the right foot in front of the left and the left foot in front of the right, and just like that. That's dancing. But not just to stand there during the kirtan without dancing is that you're not participating. So, because the whole process of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is chanting and dancing. So we're chanting, and the feet should be moving. At least a little bit from side to side. Yes?
We're talking recently, and they say that if you don't dance in the first time, that's the person is heavy with sin.
Is what?
It's heavy laden with sin.
What's it?
Heavy with sin, and sin is laying on the ground.
I don't doubt that. The scriptures speak very strongly about these things, so I don't remember reading it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is chanting and dancing. And without chanting and dancing, you're cutting off 2/3 of the process. The other third is eating prasad. And if you just eat prasad, and unless you're a self-realized soul, you won't make it just by eating prasad. If you're self-realized, then you can just eat your way back to Godhead, but pretty hard for most of us. So we need all three. We need to chant, dance, and take prasad. These three things are the three-point process of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you see, if you look at their feet are dancing. Their feet are not straight, standing in one place. They're dancing, right? And their arms are up. They're also in a dancing pose. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, and the process is to chant and to dance. And you'll be surprised, when everyone does it, the whole atmosphere becomes surcharged. Because when you chant, your heart is exhibiting your devotion to the Lord. So I know sometimes we don't feel like, and we're tired, or we're just had a bad day, but by doing it, it has an effect, just immediately. Sometimes immediately when you do it, sometimes after a while. Sometimes you feel so many, when you try to dance, this pain comes, or that, everything just starts to hurt like crazy. But that pain that we feel sometimes when we dance is that the muscles are just, they're not used to doing that. But if you just keep dancing after a while, you go beyond that stage, and then after a while you start feeling good. It's like doing exercise. After a certain point, you just get into it, and then but of course it's more than exercise, because you get Lord Nityananda's special mercy as you're dancing. And then pretty soon, that's why you see that sometimes devotees can dance for hours. I see it. Just go. You ever see Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj dance? Woo! He really goes. Can't keep up with him. He'll dance for him. His clothes will be like, you can take him and wring him out at the end of the kirtan. He always carries an extra set of clothes with him. He's, perspiring so much. He dances. And what happens when he leaves kirtan, he dances. And everybody becomes enlivened. The whole place just comes electrified. They were telling me, he went to a Sunday feast program in Washington, D.C. It's like our Sunday feast. 90% of the people are Indian congregation. So he led one kirtan, he was dancing. That was the talk of the whole week, his kirtan in that program. People who came off the street, they were dancing, and they were just like totally amazed. They were just pulled into it. When one is enthusiastic, they make others enthusiastic. And even if you don't feel it, you don't have to jump, you don't have to dance or do anything fancy. Just Chaitanya Prabhupada said, we do the Swami step. Just lift your arms up, move your arms from your legs from side to side. That's dancing. That's fine. So that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's process.
I've heard some of the devotees say the dancing is
you can do that, but you can do that anytime. During the kirtan, you should dance. I mean, you can look at the deity is open all the time. And even if you want to look at the deity, you can still do it by just moving side to side, like that. The thing is that what we do is like an example for others. If we're morose, we also pull people into that energy. So in Krishna consciousness, everything is meant for the pleasure of the Lord. So we should leave our minds and how we feel behind. We're here to please Krishna. We chant to please Krishna, we dance to please Krishna, we eat to please Krishna, we preach to please Krishna, we do everything to please Krishna. If we always think, well, how I feel, how will you ever get off the bodily platform? You stay on the bodily platform if you do things according to how you feel or don't feel. That means your feelings are, So, Vishnu Jan Maharaj. Have devotees seen that book that's been recently published called Radha Damodar Vilas? Beautiful book. The life of Jayananda, Vishnu Jan Swami, and the Radha Damodar Traveling Sankirtan Party. Beautiful book. Well, Vishnu Jan Swami's life is highlighted in there. And he used to lead kirtan. He would chant with Murdanga for 8-10 hours sometimes. then he would come back to the temple after Harinam, and he would lead kirtans here. So one time, I remember he came to Nurundavan, and he was chanting and dancing. And someone came up to him and said, "Maharaj, how is it you're always enthusiastic?" He says, "No, I'm not always enthusiastic." He said, "I act enthusiastically." He said, "By acting enthusiastically, you feel enthusiastic. It's not artificial, because the nature of the soul is to joyfully serve the Lord. So when we transcend how we feel and act according to how we're supposed to, we actually develop that, because the Krishna's mercy then comes. You get Krishna's mercy when you act according to how you're supposed to. So we dance even if we don't feel like dancing. We chant and sing even though we don't feel like it, and after we do it, we feel like it. It becomes nice, right? Have any of you had experiences that just by doing something, it just makes a difference? Have any of you had experience like that? So it's like that. Okay? And especially, Lord Chaitanya's birthday is coming up. So we should greet him with chanting and dancing. Okay, and the last part of the etiquette is class. Again, for class, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to help set the mood for Bhagavatam class, where by reading the verse, he wanted the devotees to learn how to chant the verse. So by chanting the Sanskrit, responsibly with the speaker, and then also chanting the verse, it helps us to learn the verse, and it also helps to set a certain mood for class. So he encouraged all the devotees to try to practice chanting the verses. And even if you, I remember for years and years and years, I mean years, I'd be petrified to chant the verse. I'd be sitting out there and somebody'd be giving class, and I'm thinking, I hope they don't ask me to chant it. I'd be hiding. I'd be really nervous, because I couldn't chant the verse. I couldn't know the Sanskrit. And I would just like, oh no. And then sometimes I would do it and come out all wrong. Couldn't pronounce the words, or I'd make a mistake, or stumble. But after a while, if you practice, it comes. So Prabhupada wanted that, just to, you know, chant responsibly. Everyone should try to chant the verse. The men chant, and the ladies like that. And then for hearing class, of course, hearing means to attentively listen. Attention should be on the class, because nasta prayesha abhidesha nityam bhagavata sevaya bhaktavi bhaktavati uttama sloke bhakti bhagavati naistike. By regular attendance in Srimad Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed, and loving service unto the transcendent Lord is established by as an irrefutable fact. So by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam class every day, the heart becomes purified. Even if you don't ask any questions, even if you don't understand anything, if you attentively listen to class, then the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is very powerful. And so even if the speaker is so unqualified, just like when I speak, I'm so unqualified to speak Bhagavatam, but it doesn't matter, even if somebody like me is giving class, if you listen, because it's not me speaking, it's like we're here to represent Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is giving class. In many temples, when the speaker speaks, they put a book in front of Prabhupada, and they put Prabhupada's eyeglasses on. Because it's not the person speaking, it's Prabhupada speaking. He's giving the class. And we're somehow or other praying that we can represent Prabhupada by speaking what he wants us to speak, in the way that he wants us to speak. So the speaker is a representative of the previous acharyas, like that. So it doesn't matter who's giving class. If you come and you listen, you benefit. You benefit like that. So these are just some points of etiquette for the morning program that I thought would be important to understand. Because etiquette is, again, it's explained that behavior and etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. By following the etiquette, we actually become Krishna conscious, just by following the principles like that. And we're with a temple where there are many people who are coming outside. There are guests, and many of them don't know the etiquette. If we don't follow the etiquette, then they will never learn the etiquette. And then after a while, the real etiquette will get lost. Because everyone coming from outside, they have their own ideas of what they should do and how they should act. So it's important that devotees set the standard, those who are living in the temple, for others to learn like that. Okay. Sorry if I committed any offenses, but I felt the need to explain the etiquette for the morning program. But just to see how important this is. Srila Prabhupada said, by following sadhana, practically 95% of your Krishna consciousness is based on your sadhana. Hearing and chanting, coming to the morning program. This is where you get your spiritual shakti from. Of course, doing the devotional service during the day is qualitatively enhanced or decreased according to your participation and your enthusiasm in the morning program. The morning program sets the foundation for our spiritual strength. Also, I would also encourage devotees to chant japa together. As much as possible, stay in the temple and chant together. Because by chanting together, we get strength. This is sankirtan. It's easier to keep the mind focused, generally, when you chant in a group. Because the tendency is you see other people chanting, and you also hear the sound vibration that is going on, and it helps keep the mind together. And one should chant nicely. One should not chant so loudly that everybody else wants to run out. But one should chant loud enough where they can hear nicely, like that. And then everyone should chant in the temple. There's a section for the ladies and a section for the men. It's not that the ladies have to go outside, they should also be in the temple. One time there was a movement in our society. Prabhupada was traveling, he left, and so the men decided, well, the ladies should chant in another room. So Prabhupada came back and said, what is this? He said, no, the women should also chant in the temple. He says, if the brahmacharis are agitated hearing the women chant, he says, then they should go into the woods and chant. Into the forest, he said. That was of course, this was in New York, so it was pretty hard to find a forest. New York City, but... So he wanted devotees to chant in the temple. And of course, those who are chanting should respect other devotees and not chant so loud that their chanting is the only one that's heard. So, chant where you can hear nicely. Chant loud enough, too. If you chant together, they say, a family that prays together stays together. The more we work together in our doing the devotional activities and doing sadhana, the more we find a common bond and we develop a relationship with the devotees. And in that relationship, we actually find happiness and enthusiasm in our Krishna consciousness. So that foundation is our morning program. Yes, Dilip? Well, you can't really separate them. Both are important. If you do just sadhana and you don't do any devotional service, basically, you can do that for a little while, but after a while you'll lose your taste for sadhana. Because by doing devotional service, you get the enthusiasm to continue your sadhana. It helps you become more fired up for sadhana. And one fuels the other. By sadhana, you become enthusiastic to serve, and by service, you look forward and you become more fired up to do sadhana. If you just do sadhana all day, you just do sadhana, don't do any devotional service, you won't have enthusiasm for sadhana. It's like you can't separate the two. Both have to be there. Sadhana is the foundation. It's like, let me give you an example. Sadhana is like if you're building, you have a garden. Sadhana is like putting the seed in the ground and watering the plant. That's sadhana. Now, the service is like making the ground nice where the plant can grow, pulling out all the weeds and putting a fence around it and make sure the soil is nice. The cultivation of the soil. So if you just do the sadhana and the weeds grow up, and the place is not kept nicely and people trample through it, and then ultimately your sadhana will gradually wither and die and dry up. So the sadhana and service are like a complete package. Like that. Yes?
I've seen over the years when they have nice sadhana, something like what I've been and when it comes to when you're just basic, even physical, like service, they're not doing fun. But they would rather get a chance to wait 3 or 5 hours a day to go into all the service. Is that correct?
If you mean initiated devotees? Well, in the case of initiated devotees, they're supposed to work under the guidance of their spiritual master. If their spiritual master tells them to do that, then that's their service. If they're just doing it whimsically, and the temple president says, no, you should do this service, then they're not following. That means they're not getting the benefit for themselves or others, because to get the mercy, you have to follow the instructions. You have to follow the authorities in order to get the mercy. The authority is the temple president, and those designated in different positions of authority by the temple president to carry out the functions. They are supposed to give the standard for guidance of the devotees. In the absence of the spiritual master, the temple president is there. Usually the spiritual master is not supposed to interfere with the temple president's authority. Even if his disciple is in the temple, the temple president is supposed to work, have the authority to use the disciple in a way that is beneficial. Well, of course, he gets his guidance from his spiritual master also, spiritually. But for executing the functions of the temple, we have temple president and supposed to be temple commander. Unfortunately, We have a little bit of a gap in position here. But generally, that's how it works, yes.
Suppose the temple president is not following the guidelines set down for temple president.
That question is an assumption. Is that a hypothetical question or a factual question?
Actually,
it's a factual question. Well, I can't answer that because I have to agree with your facts before I answer it. In other words, if you're talking specifically, first of all, it's not the place for Srimad Bhagavatam to deal with these things. Anyone's personal situation or not personal situation is not the place for Srimad Bhagavatam. This is just general philosophy. We're just giving philosophical points. We don't speak about individuals in class. Okay, if you're speaking hypothetically, then if you're speaking just philosophically, then the answer to that is that everyone should follow. Everyone should follow. You should always, the best way to become Krishna conscious is always look to yourself. If you read the words of the acharyas, they always, in the scriptures, they say if you find any lack in Krishna consciousness, look into your own heart, and then you'll find that's where you can solve the problem. If you look outward to solve a problem, you'll never solve it. Problems exist within us. Externally, there may be some deficiency, and that's also important to deal with. But generally speaking, 99.9% of our problems are due to the fact that we need to work on ourselves. Really. When you become Krishna conscious, you see the whole world differently. When you're not Krishna conscious, you see the whole world with so many problems. So we need to work on ourselves. And for rectification of managerial or structural organizational problems, there should be boards of directors and problem-solving programs. But generally, philosophically, practically, in our devotional sense, we should always look into our own hearts and minds to see how we can better ourselves. As we improve, we find that everybody else improves too. It's amazing how everybody else improves as we improve. Isn't that true? As you become more happy and Krishna conscious, you find that everybody else looks nicer. And when you're not feeling nice or having problems, then everybody else looks like, oh my God. Right? You know? The mind is a reflection of what's inside. So therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta is very serious. He says that we should always look to ourselves if there's some lack. Really. It's the best way to solve all problems. Yes, Rajkisha Prabhu. Shankar Prabhu, did you catch the question?
I was saying that, Mr. Prabhu was saying earlier that coming to the temple can touch Prabhupada's feet, why not initiate yoga?
I've been in the movement for 27 years, and we've never done that. And Prabhupada never encouraged it when he was here. Devotees, his disciples, never touched his feet. And we've never done it in Guru Puja for years. Since I've been here for the last 3 years, guests come in and they touch the feet, because many of our guests are Indian. And the Indian culture is you touch the feet of a holy man. That's the culture. So some of our devotees are doing that also. They're just imitating the guests. There's no need. Prabhupada never encouraged it, nor did he want it done, and for those who are devotees. But he never stopped people from the outside from touching his feet, because he knew that was their culture, and that's the way it's done. But there's no need for the devotees to do it. And if you want to do it, you can do it. I was discussing this with some senior devotees when I was in India, and we were just reflecting the fact that Prabhupada never encouraged it. In fact, he said you shouldn't touch the feet. He said if a disciple does it, it's okay, but he didn't encourage that at all. But when our guests come in, if they do it, that's fine. Prabhupada's there, they're getting the mercy of Prabhupada. But you get the mercy of Prabhupada's mercy by chanting the holy names, by engaging in devotional service. You're getting that mercy. What does it mean to touch the feet? It means that feet mean devotional service. So when you're touching Prabhupada's feet, that means I'm coming here to serve you. That's what it means. But of course people don't, when they come here, they're thinking if I touch his feet, put it on my head, then I get blessed. And because I get this blessing, then I can have good health, can relieve my stomach pains. Prabhupada said that on the tape the other day. He said, some people, they go to the guru because they have colic pain. He said, Guru Maharaj, I have pain in stomach. Can you help me? Baba said, why you come to Guru for pain? Take some pills. The culture in India is that people come to the holy men for everything. Everything. But the holy men are here, that's nice, but they're ultimately here to give you devotional service. One time, one man, he came up to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was walking out of the temple. Prabhupada, give me your blessing. Give me your blessing, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, my blessing is that your material life will be finished. The man went, practically fell against the wall. Said, that's my blessing. Your material life is finished. He didn't want that blessing at all. So, you know. Yes. So if you try to stop that, you'll cause a revolution. Because that's the culture. That's the culture coming from India. Therefore, Prabhupada didn't want people to touch his feet. He didn't want it. He writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, one should not, because when you touch someone's feet, you transfer part of your karma to that person. And that karma means that that person has to be spiritually strong. If they're not spiritually strong, then they get a reaction for that. And that means that the reaction was that person may get sick, or he may even fall down from his spiritual practice if he touched someone's feet. So Prabhupada knew that, so he would have his devotees. Tamal Krishna Goswami was one of Srila Prabhupada's most enthusiastic protectors. He would always protect Prabhupada. Right, Mataji? He was Prabhupada's right-hand man. He was right always with Prabhupada, always making sure everything was right. He probably could tell you many stories how he would have to push people away from Prabhupada. But Prabhupada wouldn't stop anyone from touching his feet. But his devotees would not allow the guests to do it. They would stop him. No, you can't do that. But sometimes they would be a little bit strong with the guests. And then Prabhupada would say no. He would let them touch. Because if the guest was offended, and then Prabhupada wondered, didn't want that to happen. But the etiquette is Prabhupada, you're right, Prabhupada didn't want anyone to touch his feet. One time, Radhanath Swami was telling me. And he was telling me when he first met Prabhupada in Bombay in 1971. And Radhanath Maharaj used to travel all over India, and he was always visiting the holy men. And he picked up the culture and custom. So when he saw Prabhupada, he came up to him, and he was just about to touch Prabhupada's feet. And one of Prabhupada's senior disciples said, no, you can't touch his feet. He stopped him. And Radhanath Swami was relating the story. And Prabhupada looked at this devotee, and he said, he can touch my feet. He allowed him to. But Prabhupada had that rule, generally, don't allow people to touch my feet. But he would not create anxiety within people by jumping and running like that. Generally, so you're right. Generally, people shouldn't touch Prabhupada's feet. That's Prabhupada's desire. But ultimately, he wouldn't personally stop that. So devotees are supposed to pretty much stop it. But if you do it in the wrong way, then what happens is people become very, very offended and they don't understand. And people will become mad. So these things should be preached. Like that. These things should be preached. Okay. Any okay, Shankar Prabhu? Is that clear? Well, the thing is, if you do it yourself, you're setting an example for everyone else to do it. They'll do it too. Because, you're doing it. If you want that not to happen, then you should not also do it. That's one of the reasons why Prabhupada didn't want his devotees to touch his feet, because it sets an example for others. There's one verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in one purport, he writes about that. About touching his feet. Okay, yes, Mother Dina? Okay. First question was, before taking prasadam, Everyone should say a prayer. The movement, we started our movement where all the devotees would sit down in lines and then prasadam would be served out by servers and the prayer would be said together. Like that. That's how prasadam is usually done. And since we've gotten away from that, so now we come and sit, take some prasadam and you sit down. So everyone should be conscious enough to say the prayer to at least to themselves. You should always say the prayer to yourself. We may not be able to do it as a group because the way it's, the serving is not set up like that. But take your plate, sit down, remove your shoes, come sit at the table, and then before you take prasad, say the prasadam prayer. If you don't know the prayer, then say some prayer that will offer an honor prasad. So everyone should do that. That's problem. Okay? Because we're prasadam is Krishna, and we're approaching the Lord through the sense of taste. When we see the deity, that's the sense we're approaching the Lord through the eyes, and we chant through the mouth, and we hear through the ears, and again the sense of taste. So we're tasting Krishna. Prasadam is Krishna. When you eat prasadam, you're tasting Krishna. Krishna comes in the form of prasad. When Sri Prabhupada would be sitting sometimes, and they would bring in prasadam, he would immediately stop, and he would give attention and honor to prasad, because Krishna has come in the form of prasad. So before we do that, it's proper to say the prayer. The prayer is written in the song books, and maybe what we can do is have the prayer written out and posted somewhere in the prasadam room where everyone can read it and see it and chant it like that. Okay, and she had two questions. All right. And the second one was, when you're drinking water, you don't have to offer the water. You can chant, when you drink water, the idea is say, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, three times when you drink water. And that is considered acceptable. Like that. Now, things you don't offer to Krishna, like potato chips, and soda pop, and stuff like that. First of all, it's not really the best stuff to eat. But if you must eat it, you can still offer it. You can offer it, you should somehow or other offer it. You should not eat any boga, like that. So say some prayers and offer it like that to the spiritual master. Better not to offer him junk food. But if you are determined and you're traveling, then better to make the offering, but pray that one day you can have something better to eat. Something like that. The idea is that, you know, you want to eat prasad, and sometimes you're traveling or you're out and you need something, there's a snack or something like that. Take it, say the prayers, but don't make a big habit out of it. You know. Try to take prasad as much as you can. Okay? That's basically the principles. We should not take anything that's not offered to the Lord. And that is, there's two things, boga and prasad. Boga means meant for Krishna's enjoyment, and prasada means that Krishna has enjoyed it and is coming in the form of his mercy. Like that. Yes, Bhakti?
Okay, since we're talking about prasada, now I'm taking two classes on prasada, and I have a question book at home, and I constantly see the edge of the thing broke down there a lot. And, you know, about not taking the shoes off when we eat prasada. And also,
the way. There's a sign up. You see the sign that says, please remove your shoes here.
Yeah, but they don't do it.
And then you should do it.
Yeah.
But if you say he's not doing it, therefore I should not do it, then two wrongs make a right. I can't speak for somebody else. The leader should set the standard. Yes. We're not here to complain about anybody else. Always look to yourself. But generally speaking, everyone should follow the principles. That's what we were talking about before. That actually sparked the whole conversation that by following a certain etiquette, others will be inspired to also follow the same way. So yes, leaders more than anyone should follow the standard, whoever that leader is. But the thing is, you're all a leader. Everyone's a leader because whatever you do, somebody will follow you. Right? There's always somebody who wants to follow somebody. Right? Whatever you do, you're an example. Prabhupada says, everyone has influence. Whatever you do, whatever you think, or whatever you say, has influence. It influences others in one way or the other. It influences them in a positive way, or it influences them in a negative way, or it influences them in somewhat of a mixed positive, mixed negative. So, we should be exemplary in our own. And we should be very tolerant of everyone else's mistakes. If you're intolerant of others, others will be intolerant of you. What goes around comes around. If you criticize others, you will be criticized by Krishna. If you criticize others, you'll be neglected by Krishna. The greatest sin in Vaishnava circles is to criticize others. That is the greatest of all sins. And you fall down in your spiritual life by criticizing others. So if you see some discrepancy, and that discrepancy is disrupting the functioning of the thing, you have to deal with that in a very, very Krishna conscious way. That means you have to put a straw between your teeth, go up to the person, and plead to them that please do something different. That means you have to approach them in a very humble mood. You have to apologize for approaching them. But at the same time, you have to give your opinion. Now, my dear sir, I know you're a very important devotee, and I appreciate your association and everything, but I see you're maybe doing, would you consider doing this a little different just for the sake of others? And that's how you have to make your criticisms. You have to see that person you're criticizing as more important and greater than you. Then you can criticize. If you can't do that, then don't criticize. Better not to criticize at all. Bhaktisiddhanta says, and that is the greatest of all sins, criticizing others. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, prajalpa, gossip, criticism, fault-finding, blasphemy of devotees. You want to destroy your spiritual life fast? That's the fastest way you can do it. That's the easiest, the quickest, and fastest means of killing your Krishna consciousness, when you find fault with others. Because we're all full of faults. The fact is, everyone has faults. Even the moon has spots. Right? So you stand there looking at the moon and say, the moon has spots. Look at the moon, it's defective. But the moon is giving out light. So it has some spots, but still it's giving out light. So everyone has their good qualities, everyone has faults. So there's two things. The fly goes for the stool, the honeybee goes for the honey. A devotee looks for the good, and the materialist looks for the faults. So we should try to look for the good in everyone. That will also please Krishna. That will also please Krishna. Sorry if I had to speak a little stronger, but to make the point clear. Yes?
And one more observation. Now, in the truth, in the food etiquette book that I have.
Buddha?
No, it's food etiquette book. People like man in the book today, you know, they say that, okay, I see the good that they serve the food out there. It invites people to break the etiquette by not washing their hands after they eat. And then they go back and, especially guests, then they go back and get some more food. And I see this constantly occurring all the time. So, shouldn't there be some way that they can go to, like, serving food like they do, like, doing down the road, and okay, they can sit on the floor, and they
I think this, with all due respect to your concern, I think this discussion should be continued in a more, in a different way, a different circle. This is not the point for dealing with the different, how things are done in the temple. This is a Bhagavatam class. This is for philosophy. Okay? I'm not, just pushing you to the side. I just think it's not appropriate for everyone else to get involved with just, how things are done in the temple. It's totally irrelevant for the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Okay? So I think we took up enough time. And so we should go on to other things. Any last points? Actually, we never did get the Srimad Bhagavatam class. So shall we begin now? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, next time, tomorrow. Sorry for not going into Bhagavatam, but thank you very much for your kind attention and participation. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.